Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I want to tell you my secret now. I see death.
Silent train is people!
No. I am the father.
What's in the box?
You did it! You blew it up! Damn you, Holden!
Hello, and welcome to Slate's Spoiler Specials. I'm Allegra Frank, senior editor at Slate, and I'm joined by Slate staff writer Rachel Hampton. Welcome, Rachel.
Hi, Allegra. Thanks for having me.
Before I get into what we're spoiling today, I just want to say happy birthday, Rachel. It's Rachel's birthday.
Thank you. We love a little March pandemic anniversary.
Yeah, truly, truly. Yeah. It's not going to be Rachel's birthday when you're listening to this, but as we record, I'm just going to make as many references to your birthday so that you can continue to feel somewhat sad about it being your second pandemic birthday.
Thanks. I love this vibe for myself. Will I ever have a birthday where I don't think about the pandemic? Unclear.
Not with me around, at least, Rachel. Well, other than spoiling Rachel's birthday, we are here to spoil Coming to America, and that's to, like, the number, which is the sequel, long-awaited sequel to the Eddie Murphy 1988 classic, I would call it a classic, Coming to America. It is out now on Amazon Prime after a couple pandemic-related delays, as is the case these days. And Rachel and I have watched it, we have thought about it, and now we are going to spoil it. So Rachel, my first question to you before we really dive in is, what did you think of this movie?
So we slacked a little bit about this as we were watching it, but I thought it was really boring. It's really hard to watch a movie in the pandemic anyway. Like, my attention span is completely shot, and so things really have to be engaging, and like, combined with the kind of screener of it all where your like email address is written across, it's like really hard to kind of get involved. But even with all of that, this movie was kind of uniquely just like not holding my interest at all. Like, I was not invested in any of these characters. I wasn't invested in the romance, which is like normally what like keeps me going. It was just like, I kept looking at Twitter throughout it, and I was like, this is not what I should be doing right now, because I'm also watching this for work. Like, I have to actually pay attention. So it just, like, I don't think it built well on the first one. Like, it very much felt like a, we need to do a sequel because it's like reboot era. So let's do this.
Totally. Yeah, I felt the same way. Yeah, when we were DMing and you were like, I was looking at Twitter and pausing the movie to look at Twitter. I was like, oh, girl, I am not even pausing. I'm straight up on Twitter, slacking you. I have one eye on this movie at this point. It felt endless at the same time, too. Like, it just felt like such a long movie. And I agree. It sort of feels as though there was some sort of obligation, because yes, it's the reboot era, as you said. So there was some sort of obligation on Eddie Murphy's part, perhaps, to dive into his oeuvre and find something that they could very easily, maybe even cheaply, hastily bring back up, like resuscitate. I've read that they have been thinking about making a sequel for a couple years now, although at the same time, we've had sequelitis for many years now, so that's probably still, you know, the thinking. So there is at least that sort of, okay, this is a little bit of a passion project for him. Like, this is something he's been thinking about for some time. But we're going to get into the actual, like, nitty-gritty how this movie runs, but I am completely on your page. It
Thank
is boring.
So
yes.
Just like, for him to have been thinking about it for so long, where that came out the most, I think, was in the caliber of stars that he managed to bring together. Like, that was cool, seeing how many people were involved in this. Like, it was like the who's who of Black Hollywood. Like, I wouldn't have been surprised if Will Smith showed up at some point. He did not. Sorry to spoil that. But
don't apologize. That's what we're doing.
We're here to spoil it. Yeah, Will Smith does not show up, but he could have, and I wouldn't have been surprised.
Mm-hmm.
And so that felt kind of where most of the effort went. But other than that, I was just like, I don't know why this exists.
Right, exactly. Yeah, we'll get into some of the other kind of like fun appearances. But let's dive into the movie itself. So when we start, it picks up like, you know, in the present day. Mm-hmm. So thinking about the original movie set in 1988. So now we're zooming up back to, or up to, I guess, 2020 or whatever, 2019. Mm-hmm. Present day. We're in Zamunda, the kingdom of Zamunda, and our beloved Prince Akeem, aka Eddie Murphy, is now King Akeem, or he's about to be, because his dad, King James Earl Jones, is he's been on his deathbed for some time when we show up, which is like a sad thing to even consider ever possible.
Yes, definitely. I was like, let's not put this into the universe, but also I was really surprised that he wasn't king yet. Like, I was like, James Earl Jones wasn't like young when this movie first came out.
Yeah.
So for Eddie Murphy to still be prince at like 40 years, however old he, like, he has teenage children. I was just like, clearly we wanted James Earl Jones to still be in this movie. Like, it makes sense that this is like the passing of the torch, but I was just like, huh, okay, this is where, like, basically he hasn't changed much since the last time we saw him. Like, his position's fundamentally the same.
Yeah, exactly. So it is a weird sort of start where we still have Prince Akeem kind of needing to ascend to his position as King Akeem. But at the same time, he is thinking about, you know, his own heir to the throne.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're already working on this lineage. And as you mentioned, he does have teenage daughters whose names are like Tinashe, which I thought was cute. I was like,
what's going on here?
I'm like, you're just going through like my specific like R&B playlist and finding some black women names to steal. Like, it could have been Beyonce and Solange. And, like,
yeah,
Kelly
I was like,
Rowland.
Where's Solange? Where's Kelly? Like, we're just gonna have Tinashe, and then what? Mika is, I think, his eldest daughter, who is like theoretically the heir to the throne.
Right.
But apparently in Zamunda, the crown can't pass to women, which, you know, a little retrograde, but I guess is the central tension of this entire movie, basically, is who's going to be the heir to his throne.
Exactly. So we're presented with, okay, he only has these daughters, and Mika is now 21, which in the original movie, that's when Akeem was set to be, you know, married off so that he would have his future queen all set, which, of course, you know, he ends up ditching that plan, going to America, marrying Lisa, the heir of her own, to her own throne.
To the McDowell family fortune.
The McDowell family fortune, which, yes. I mean, I'm a fan of, because they do have a McDowell's outpost in Zamunda now, which is very fun.
Love that callback.
Love that callback.
Yeah.
But yeah, so now, as you said, like, there is that central tension of he has to find his heir, but he is still presiding over this very patriarchal society that, because he's starting in the same position where we left him, of not actually being the guy in charge, nothing has really changed in that sense. Like, he still has to marry his daughter off, or his oldest child off at 21. Like, it's still an arranged marriage. It's still, he needs a son, ideally. Like, she can't be queen because it has to go to a male heir, but he doesn't have one. But then, of course, very shortly into this drama of trying to marry off his daughter to ultimately a really shitty prince who shows up, very shitty.
I forgot what his name is, but I was just like, okay, but this is what's going on. He is the son of the brother of the woman that Eddie Murphy was originally supposed to marry in Coming to America. Of what? Yes. What's the name of the country? Like Nextdoria or something? Like
it might as well be. It's like basically nothing.
Yeah, I was like, okay, this is, I forgot the name of this country, but okay, here we go. And so Eddie Murphy doesn't want to marry his child off to this, like, this guy's son, which is maybe like the first sign that Eddie Murphy has any thoughts about how to run this country. He's just like, I'm not going to make my daughter marry this like trash individual. Then James Earl Jones dies, basically, mm-hmm. which is
right.
What launches kind of this tailspin, which is as James Earl Jones is dying, he's like, you need to have a son to put on the throne. And Eddie Murphy is like, yeah, sure, fine. And we find out that back during the setting of the original movie, he had had a one-night stand, a drugged one-night stand.
Yeah, that was really... Please finish that, and I'll tell you my angry thoughts on that.
Yeah,
he had a one-night stand.
He had a one-night stand. Yeah, him and Leslie Jones, like, have a night together because Eddie Murphy's friend, who was played by Arsenio Hall, whose name I'm forgetting.
Simmy,
yes.
Yeah.
But so Simmy wants to get some, basically, and he sets up Eddie Murphy with Leslie Jones, and Leslie Jones gives him what I thought was a joint, but is laced with something else. And so he hallucinates that he is getting attacked by like a wild boar or something. Mm-hmm. And it is actually comes to fruit like light that he has a son from this drugged, hallucinated encounter with Leslie Jones. So the son is something like 30, like turning 30 that year. So he just hasn't known about this child for 30 years because I guess Simmy assumed he was going to have a son with Lisa, but he doesn't. Right. But please tell me your thoughts about this extraneous bastard son born of a random hallucinated, dubiously consensual encounter.
I will say I do love that he consistently refers to his son, whose name is Lavelle, aka Jermaine Fowler, who is beautiful, I will say.
Yes.
As his bastard son. Like, even when he's introducing him to his children, he's like, this is your brother, my bastard son.
Yes. And by he gets to, like, the third daughter, Lavelle is just like, yes, I am the bastard son. Please stop saying that. They get it.
Yes. But, yeah, I mean, I thought that contrivance of, like, oh, you do have a son. I mean, it's like, you know, it's a contrivance. And that's fine. I understand why they have to do it. But the way they do it of, like, actually showing that scene of Leslie Jones and, like, you know, de-aged Eddie Murphy having this horrible... It's basically a rape, right? Yeah. Like, he is literally drugged. And it's played for laughs. And that does not fly for me ever in my life, but, like, especially in 2021, watching this now. So that was, like, an extremely disturbing detail that, you know, is meant to be like, oh, it's so funny. This is how he had his son. It was just, like, such a weird roundabout way to introduce these characters that made me, like, immediately turned off by them. So, like, immediately I have this resistance. Like, Leslie Jones literally raped the prince, and now this is their result. And she's just like, oh yeah, okay, that's cool, I guess that is your dad, I was a hoe, which, like, yes, is kind of funny, but also Jesus.
Yeah, it's like, so they go to meet his, they go to America to meet his son, and it's just assumed that it is his son, even though Leslie Jones admittedly said that she was a hoe, which, like, live your best hoe life. I mean, don't drug anybody, but, like, other than that, we are sexually positive here. Like, live your best life. But no one brings up the idea of a paternity test. Like, I'm just like, wait, so you self-admittedly did, like, you, she looked, when she met Akeem again, she looked at him and she's like, oh yeah, you are his father. And I was just like, wait, hold on. If we're having this moment, like, let's just do a little blood test. Like I was really surprised because he's heir to a very, like, what looks like a rich country. And I'm just like, no one has thought to raise the question of the paternity of this child. Like, this seems like a mistake. Like, I thought that I was going to be the tension at the end of the movie, I was like, okay, so he's going to go to Zamunda and they're going to do all this princely training and then someone's going to be like, get a paternity test. And then at the end, it's going to be like, you are not the father, but he's still going to be like a son in his heart.
Yeah.
But that's not what happened. It's just assumed. It's just taken for granted.
Yeah, it's like very, it's very bizarre. I love this headcanon that you just gave me of an ending. I think that would have been really cool.
Right?
And interesting. Yeah.
And then Mika could have been queen and it would have been like, it would have made more sense where I would have just been like, okay, cool. Like she's queen because she is queen in her own right, not because like Lavelle decided to abdicate the throne, you know? But no. Right.
That's not what happens. It is really lame, honestly, that like this has to be his biological son. And I get that he was like, I have never lain with another woman but Lisa. And then Arsenio Hall can straight up come and say, actually, you have, because I was there. But it is still like, okay, really, we're just like fast forwarding. So yeah, like he goes to America, he finds his son almost instantly, even though he lives in Queens and you know, there are millions of people in New York City, but okay.
Yeah.
He finds his son right after his son has gone to a really shitty job interview with Colin Jost.
Well, Colin Jost. Yes. I was like, Colin Jost really does play an asshole very well. Like you look at his face and you're like, I want to punch you. So I was like,
exactly.
This is a good role for you. But also it just felt like so shoehorned in kind of. It was like, here's a short route to character development. We're going to put him in this job interview. He's clearly currently jobless. He didn't finish college. Like it just felt like a lot of exposition in like 2 or 3 minutes. And that's just like the substitute for his entire character development. Like he pretty much doesn't change between that moment and the end of the movie.
Exactly. It's exactly that. And of course, like a job interview is kind of like an easy way to get all those details out. Cause it's just like, and your resume says you're the sage and did this and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, being that it's Colin Jost, whose memoir I literally for some reason have in my apartment, and it is called A Very Punchable Face. So that is, you nailed it.
I didn't even know that.
It really does feel like, speaking to what you were saying before, even though he's a white dude, but like getting the kind of who's who of different people in Hollywood. So it's kind of like, oh, he's like, you know, we're adding another SNL person in here since we got Leslie Jones. Tracy Morgan plays Lavelle's uncle, Leslie Jones's brother. So yeah, after that job interview, you know, as Lavelle ceases to develop, Eddie Murphy, Prince Akeem shows up and is like, you are my son, come with me. And they're like, well, you're rich, here's your suitcase that just fell open with tons of American dollars, like thousands of dollars in it,
also gold
and
just
gold,
like gold bricks with I think Eddie Murphy's profile on them. And I was just, I was like, this seems, from a security perspective, not smart.
Yeah, you would have thought that they had learned from the first movie when they were robbed many times, and it's fine. But they all fly back to Zamunda with, you know, Leslie Jones comes too, and surprise, they show up, and he's like, by the way, Lisa, so I have a son. I didn't cheat on you, though. I slept with her and I didn't know about it.
Yeah.
And she's chill with that.
Yeah.
And I have a son and he's here, and also his mom. And she's like, okay, this is a lot. And we're also like, okay, this is a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's this moment where she's like, why didn't I know about this? And I was like, he didn't know about this. Like, why are you not concerned about the fact that your husband had a drug like encounter that produced a son that he doesn't know about? Like, I feel like you should be concerned about his mental health.
Exactly.
But also, I get that her primary concern is her daughter, where she's like, why did you go all the way to America to find an heir when you had one right here?
Right.
Which, like, is objectively true. Like, I'm just like, Akeem, you already flouted royal rules by not having an arranged marriage. Like, it's one step further to be like, my heir is my oldest child who happens to be a woman. But
exactly.
It's like, where's the thought train here? Like, what have you been doing for the past 21 years and none of this has occurred to you? Like, 31, because that's how old Lavelle is. Like, what, has there been no growth in the last 3 decades of your life besides you wanting to marry Lisa?
Yeah. that's part of, that's another sort of tension that they introduce after James Earl Jones dies and then Prince Akeem finally can become King Akeem. Something they talk about a lot is like, you need to be your own king. Just like same with Lavelle, you need to be your own prince as they're trying to train him to become a prince. At mm-hmm. the same time, it's like Akeem needs to actually like shirk these patriarchal, you know, ideals that have been leading this country and actually go with those more progressive choices that he did make in the original movie of like going to America and finding a wife. But then we see he's just basically becoming his dad in an interesting way, because like one of the key differences between this movie and the original, other than it being really bad, because I'm a fan of the original movie and this movie sucks ass, but is that Akeem, like most of it is not coming to America. It's coming back from America, right? Mm-hmm. So we're seeing a lot of Zamunda, which we didn't really get to see or learn about in the first movie.
Yeah.
And so a lot of the way we learn about Zamunda is through Lavelle being kind of trained to be a prince while Mika is very sad about it.
Yeah.
And we'll get into like the prince training, but as we're reintroduced, or really fully properly introduced to Zamunda, I'm curious what your thoughts were about, you know, how they presented it. Because that was something that really shaped me with the original movie. And then seeing now, like, okay, this is their conception of Africa, especially now, bothered me. So what did you think of, like, the Zamunda they started establishing for us?
Yeah, it felt like much of the movie underdeveloped. As a concept, I was just like, hey, there was just this tick where people would just be like, in Africa. And I'm like, you're not just like, you were in a specific country. Like, let's like, that's just one minor like vocal tick where I was like, can we not just say in Africa? And then mm-hmm. there was also just like, it felt in a way like they were trying to evoke Wakanda, but it just didn't go anywhere. Like, mm-hmm. I came away from it being like, what exactly is this country? What was the point of this? I kept comparing it to this. I don't know if you read romance novels, but there's this romance novel by Alyssa Cole. And so it's kind of like a Coming to America, like, playoff where this woman is like, her parents leave her like home country and she's raised in the foster care system of America. So she has no idea she's a princess. And the prince from that country comes to America to like bring her back because they're supposed to get married. And so just the country in that romance novel is just so much better developed than like Zamunda. I was just like, none of like, I just kept comparing it both to that and to like the concept of Wakanda. And I was just like, I don't really understand what exactly this movie is supposed to be doing here.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting because, like, especially they've had, this is the second movie starring this place. Mm-hmm. So they've had a pretty good amount of time
to figure this out. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, that's what bothered me, too. Like, definitely Leslie Jones, before they go over to Zamunda, she's like, oh, like Wakanda. Mm-hmm. And that's like a lot of people, a lot of Americans, Western viewers, sort of touchstone for, like, fictional African countries / kind of real African countries, mm-hmm. because most, you know, Western viewers in America especially are very ignorant about Africa. And this definitely plays into that of like, yeah, trying to create this utopia, but really it's like this very class-based society where the royals, you know, get to do whatever they want and have fun fight training and roam with the elephants in their backyard and have the royal ladies, you know, wash their royal penises and vaginas. And that part's always weird, but
always,
you know, but then at the same time, like everyone else is like shoeless and wearing, you know, tiny tribal fabric outfits and headdresses, which are not uncommon, but you know, it's just still, I agree, like very underdeveloped and just kind of like a mishmash of what Americans think of when they think of Africa very broadly. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that was such a big miss here, especially because yes, this is the second time that we go to Zamunda. There's a good chance to like actually develop the history a bit more, develop like the textures, but instead I have no idea if this is supposed to be based off a real African country and instead, it's just like a very disappointing, we're stuck in the palace and we're rich Africans, and then everyone else is like a tribal person.
Yeah, it was very strange to me, like, where exactly Zamunda's place was on, like, the international stage as well, just because at the very end of the movie, Lavelle, they're like, Lavelle's going to be ambassador to America. And I was like,
why?
What? Like, I didn't, what's going on here? Also, the fact that, like, they're, like, at one point, Arsenio Hall is like, you can't just walk around, you're the king, like, people recognize your face. Mm-hmm. But no one does. And I'm like, isn't there, like, some, like, diplomatic, like, kind of protocol for how you're supposed to engage here? Like, what exactly is... None of it made any sense. Like, it just felt like a... Yeah. They thought of the aesthetic of it first, and then they were like, okay, everything else is irrelevant. Like, we're just gonna put people in here. Trevor Noah's appearance in this was also an interesting choice to me as well.
Yeah, like, that was definitely... He played, like, the Zamunda News Network anchor in, like, a terrible mustache. But, yeah, I mean, he's, like, actually, you know, one of the best-known Africans in America. So that was... What did you think of that character who did appear, like, quite a lot?
Yeah, I was also just like, this is a... It felt, again, like a plot device where it was like, all right, here's how we're going to, like, check in with the normal Zamundans by having, like, Trevor Noah kind of translate what's going on here. But I was just like, what is the point of your character in this movie besides, like, kind of hinting at the turmoil within the palace? Like, it's like... It just felt like there were so many shortcuts to plot in this movie where they just used random kind of interstitial characters as a way to get around the fact that none of the characters were developed in any meaningful or interesting way.
Right. Right. Yes. I think that this movie kind of was developed like plot first, for sure. It's definitely like shoehorning a lot of these plot details, but then also like continuing to just focus on the plot, even though it clearly doesn't seem to have enough time to actually be considerate of the plot. Which I think brings me back to, so speaking of the plot, there is this huge part which is around like preparing Lavelle to be a prince, basically. Like, in order to actually assume the title of prince, the family, including like Mika, is like, well, let's actually see if he can do it first. So they put him through, yes, this like prince training, which involves learning the history of Zamunda, which is really just like remembering his ancestors' names. And then some other trials, two of which really stood out to me, because again, it was like just very much plot, not really developing the character in any meaningful way, and just kind of fast forwarding from like him not caring to him suddenly being an expert. But one of the training sequences that also made me think like, oh, this is what you think Africa is, was when he had to like get whiskers from a lion. And when we were DMing, you were like, yeah, those CGI lions. And you're like, oh God, yeah, I didn't. They were so bad. Like, they were so bad.
Yeah.
So bad.
Yeah. All the CGI animals. Like the elephant, I was just like, I know maybe you couldn't afford like a real elephant. But then I kept thinking about, and you've watched the first one recently, is the elephant in the first movie real?
I think it was, actually, because it's the same elephant, which is cute. Or, like, it's supposed to be the same elephant. But times have changed.
Times have changed, and we're all just fine with CGI animals, apparently. Like, I understand you don't want to put, like, Jeremiah Fowler in a fucking cage with a real lion. Like, I get it. I understand that's not, like, a thing that you want to do, but I was just like, this is... I don't like the way this is going. But yeah, the entire you have to get the whiskers of a lion thing, I was just like, what is going on here? Like, there's so many... It felt like so weirdly outdated, like, as a concept, like, for, like, a modern country, where I was just like, what exactly is... It just made me curious about, like, what do the royal family actually do within Zamunda? Like, is it, like, a parliament? Like, are they just, like... figureheads,
right?
Because like, I was like, if this is how you're preparing to be a prince, like, what about the actual like ruling part? Like, is he gonna meet any like people within the country to find out what they actually need? Like,
yeah, so I felt the same way about like, what is this country supposed to be that we are subjecting the prince to, like, being attacked by a lion, having to pull a whisker. Like, what does that actually say about his ability to be a prince? Because Akeem does not seem like a person who has ever had to interact with that, or like, but also maybe that's what it means to be royalty, that you're attacking or defending yourself from lions.
Maybe.
Seems like I've never been a royal, so maybe that's what all royals have to do.
I mean, true. Maybe that's what Meghan and Harry were doing, and that's why they peaced out. They were just like, fuck that shit. I'm not putting myself in danger for this white-ass bullshit. But, like, right. I just didn't understand, like, what exactly the point was of... Also, like, why did he need to find an heir immediately? Like, I get that they were like, oh, you're going to get assassinated within a week if you don't find an heir. And I was like,
that's a pretty good reason.
I was like, that's a good reason, but also that seems extreme. Like, why did they wait until his dad died to assassinate him? It would have seemed smarter to do it beforehand. Not
this is true.
Plotting is for true. Political assassination, but also like, I had so many questions.
Right. It's like they're super fast forwarding because like Wesley Snipes is the general of Nextoria, as we've named it, is like super.
He's just like, it.
I think it is, honestly. Like, that's how little they care to develop this. But he's like very anxious about, I need you to reunite our countries or I will kill you. So get this prince ready to go and he'll marry my hot daughter, who we'll get into in a second. But the other prince trial, like the final one that really disturbed me, was the royal circumcision. Which was, ooh, and they were like, so basically, like, the final step is he has to be circumcised, which he argues, I already, you know, that's a thing we do in America pretty often. Done that, been there, doesn't matter.
Been
I
don't there, done that. Don't want to
think about the
here.
Logistics, right?
No.
And that was very disturbing. So, yeah, what did you make of that and where it kind of left us, which is, like, he can be prince because he got... his extra foreskin cut off that he already didn't have.
Yeah. I mean, also, he didn't even get it cut off. Like, they were playing a joke on him. They were just like, oh, which was, I mean, I get, like, in the moment, like, you can't understand what's going on when you think your dick's about to get cut off. Like, I don't know what that feels like, but.
Yeah.
Like, he was just like, he holds up, it's a potato in this box. Mm-hmm. And so they cut it off. And so the guy who is this, like, weird medicine man, like character like eats the end of a potato, which, like, you're not supposed to eat raw potatoes, it's really bad for you. He eats the potato and he, like, Jermaine Fowler's like, what the fuck is going on here? And then they pull it out and they're like, oh, it's actually just a potato. And I'm like, wouldn't you have, like, noticed if the tip of your dick didn't get cut off? I don't know. Maybe you don't. I don't know anything about having a dick. So, like, I can't
this
really...
This is true.
I can't speak to this experience. I just feel like you would have noticed that the tip of your dick didn't get cut off. But so, like, the point of the trial is that he's, like, willing to give up what's most important to him, which is, like, his pride. Mm-hmm. And I was just like...
That doesn't seem like a thing that any of the royals have done.
Yeah, I was like, A, all of you seem very proud. I don't know what you're talking about pride here. B, what does this have to do with ruling a country? Like, where are the diplomacy lessons? Like, this feels like there was more development of what to do for a country in Princess Diaries than there was in this movie.
Yeah. Like, This is so true.
I was so confused. I the Prince trials were just, and then somehow he managed to get Mika to, like, be on his side after Mika was upset. And I was like, I don't think Mika should have given in so easily to, like, you being the new prince. I mean, I love Kiki Layne. She deserves better than this movie, to be completely honest. But I was just like, I don't like how quickly everything is coming together. Like, there's no real friction to anything happening here.
Totally. But the only sort of, like, opposition, I guess, that is there is, and as I said, we will get to the hot daughter that he might be betrothed to, but there is this sort of, like, love interest that Lavelle has. So in my doc of, like, notes, I literally could not remember her name, which, again, speaks to the development. I looked it up and it's Oma, I think. So that's her. But it's basically the royal hairstylist who, like, becomes his friend and is the only one to tell him, hey, isn't it kind of weird that you're, like, immediately sacrificing your own ideals, whatever those may be, to just, like, you know, join in on this thing where you don't even know this guy. Apparently he's your dad, but he's never been there for you. Like, even now, you don't have a relationship with him. You don't know anything about this country, but you were just willing to, like, be circumcised for it. Like, she's the only one sort of challenging him. Mm-hmm. So very quickly, he's like, oh, yes, you are so right. And then, of course, he's, like, falling in love with her right before this sudden betrothal scene.
Yeah. I love a romance. I love a fast, like, falling in love timeline. You know, mm-hmm. like, I don't mind those things, but this made no sense. She does his hair twice. They have a conversation mm-hmm. about how she wants to open her own barbershop. But apparently women can't open businesses in Zamunda. And I was like, you're telling me that, like, Lisa McDowell never raised any objections to how sexist this country was? Like, right. I find that hard to believe. Like, didn't they meet at a protest in the first movie? Like,
mm-hmm. Yeah, literally a black activist rally.
And, like, I just don't believe that Lisa would be like, nope, women can't own businesses in this country that I am mm-hmm. theoretically running. Like, and that's also what's weird is, like, her character was completely sidelined when I'm like, you are also the ruler of this country. Like, you should have some input into what's going on here. That's why Akeem married you, is because he wanted a partner, not somebody who would just sit quietly. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, what has happened in the past 30 years to make y'all like this?
It's so true. Yeah, I was very disappointed with how wasted Lisa was. And even though she would, like, push back in defending, as you mentioned before, like, her daughters, especially Mika, saying, you have an heir right here. She's perfect. What about you, Lisa? Like, you've been just sitting at home. Yeah, like, you're a queen. What role model are you? Like, you mm-hmm. haven't been doing anything. We're hearing about how sexist this country is when you were, like, basically secretly running your dad's franchise and, like, being a community organizer, and suddenly you are a royal, so you just kind of chill out and, like, have beautiful big hair and take naps.
Amazing clothes. Like, amazing I loved all clothes. Your outfits, but what does that matter for how this country is being run?
Right. And it's especially disappointing, too, because, like, then we go into this betrothal scene. I just love saying betrothal, which is
it's a great word. No, I'm into it. It's a great word.
We go into the betrothal scene, and the whole thing, as we've talked about, is, like, Akeem had totally shirked that. Like, he married Lisa because he didn't want to just marry some woman he was arranged to be with. And so even though the circumstances here are, like, he's trying to unite the country so he doesn't die, are, you know, pretty serious, it was really disappointing to see how they, like, basically just allowed this to happen. And he was just like, okay, you just have to marry this person. We'll take a brief pause here to throw to an ad. We'll be right back. And we're back.
Yeah, they kind of framed it as Lavelle's choice because he was attracted to her. And I was like, there was a very cursory moment where Akeem was like, Lavelle, you want to marry Teyana Taylor? Which, if you say no to marrying Teyana Taylor in the moment, I question everything about you. And right. He's like, yeah, I'm good with that. And it's like, okay, cool. I guess we're going to do this. Like, we got rid of the arranged marriage because Lavelle very quickly consented to getting married. It's also just like, Lavelle, you're 30 and you're not married currently, which is not a problem, but you're willing to get married within a week now? Like, what has kept you from getting married up until this point if you're willing to get married now?
Yeah, I guess the issue was that Teyana Taylor, sadly, was not in America because she's Zamundian. So had she been an American, as she is in real life,
he would have already been married, I guess.
Yeah. That's truly the only roadblock. It is weird how, like, I mean, and like, we don't know him very well. So maybe that's just the kind of crap he pulls. But yeah, right. It's good to remember, like, Tiana Taylor showed up and immediately he was like, she's hot because she is. And then, you know, he's cool with it. But then it does shift a bit because now he's in love with the hairdresser Binge. And so we do have this dance sequence that's basically like, you know, mimicking one of the most memorable sequences from the first movie, which is where they have this really beautiful, elaborate dance before introducing the bride-to-be. The difference here is that Tiana Taylor is an amazing dancer, so she actually, like, leads it.
Yeah.
Honestly, that was, like, probably my favorite scene. Oh, 100%. I love her.
Love Tiana Taylor. I was just like, I want more for Tiana Taylor in this movie.
Right.
Like, where's she going after this movie happens? Like,
yeah.
What's she up to?
Right. Especially because she apparently retired from music. So I just have a lot of Tiana Taylor grievances right now. But she led this amazing dance, but then she sucks, like, completely wasted. Yeah. Like, afterward, it turns out, even though he was into her because she's hot, she's exactly like that woman that Akeem didn't want to marry in the first movie, where it's literally word for word the same conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, having just watched it and now clearly being someone who memorized the script or whatever.
Of course.
It's like word for word, same conversation where she's like, I like anything you like. I want to do anything you do. And it's like very disturbing, of course, to see Tiana Taylor in that role, but just upsetting that this is kind of what we're seeing, potentially the average African woman being seen as in this movie.
Yeah, it's very much like, okay, Akeem's daughters aren't like that, but that's because their mother is Lisa. Oma isn't like that, but, like, she's apparently the only one who doesn't have an issue with the fact that women can't own businesses. Like, it's just very a weird setup. Because his mother, Akeem's mother in the first movie, was kind of pushing Akeem's father towards being more progressive, like, as the movie, like, went on.
Right,
and so I'm like, what happened to his mother? Like, what? I just really, I want to know about the 3 decades that happened in between the first movie and the second movie more than I want to know what happened in this movie. Because I'm just like, this movie would have made more sense if it picked up, like, immediately after that movie had ended than if it picked up 30 years later. Because, like, the fact that almost nothing has changed to the point that, like, this random outsider has to come in and, like, immediately shake shit up, you know, on a very basic level. Like, not even, like, oh, we need to, like, I don't even know, like, something that actually is relevant for 2020. It's like, oh, we have to do the very bare minimum and let women own a business and, like, be able to inherit the crown. It's like, why are you, what's going on here?
Right.
What's happening?
Right. I love the idea of it, like, even if it had picked up from, you know, where we left off immediately and then fast forwarded or something. I don't even know. Or, like, with all the exposition, I agree, like, they should have at least filled in way more of the blanks between 1988 and now. Because, why didn't anyone say that the queen was dead in the beginning? She was way cooler than James Earl Jones.
Yeah.
Like, why is no one upset about this? Because I agree, like, she was definitely more progressive. She wanted her son to be close to her. She was the one who supported him marrying Lisa. But suddenly, once she dies, of course, and the men are the only ones in charge, things get bad again. Naturally.
Of course. But it's also, like, she dies, but Lisa's still there. Like, I just...
Right.
The way Lisa's character was treated, like, she didn't even fully speak up until, like, there's the night of the betrothal where Tiana Taylor and Lavelle are supposed to be, like, confirming that they're gonna get married to each other.
Yeah.
But Lavella's like, yo, I really love my barber, so I'm gonna get the fuck up out of here and go back to America. Which, like, this private jet moves at the speed of light. I did not know you
so
could
fast.
So fast. And during the sequence of this party, Leslie Jones and Lisa get really drunk together and they finally, like, connect, which I'm like, Lisa, you haven't theoretically seen anyone from Queens in, like, 30 years. Like, I would think you would be more, like, I understand it's a weird situation, but, like, I would think you would have been more happy about, like, having a friend from Queens. But it takes them both getting drunk together for that to happen. And then finally Lisa's drunk, and then she's finally, like, coming after Akeem and being like, yo, what is wrong with you? You were supposed to be different. Like, what's happened to the man I married? And I'm like, Lisa, where have you been for the past 30 years? Like, why haven't you said this beforehand?
Right. Right. Like, did he suddenly not be the same? Like, did he suddenly change very dramatically? Because it doesn't really seem like it. You know, like, of course, this whole air conversation must have come up many times many by times. Now. Many times.
You've had three girls at this point. Like, it would have come, like, Anne Boleyn was killed after the first one. Like, we had this conversation before. There's no way.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. So, yeah, it was just, it didn't make much sense. Again, Lisa, very wasted. And I love that, you know, I loved when she brought up, I haven't seen anyone from Queens in forever, because I agree, like, that would have been a really interesting tension, too. How did Lisa feel about having to move to this place of Zamunda, having three amazing daughters? Like, that must have been very hard for her. Mm-hmm. And we don't get really any insight into that until this very brief moment and, like, those snippets of conversation. But as you mentioned, yes, like, Lavelle ends up ditching Zamunda, going back to America with his girl, Barbara girl. And suddenly, they also have to get married. What did you think of that point,
which was very weird? I was so confused. I was like, why are you? Okay. Because he decides to get married after he hears Akeem having a conversation with the, I guess, general ruler of Nextdoria, which is apparently like a military run country. So I was just like, all right, that's weird. Like, that's regressive, but whatever. So he, like, they're having a conversation and he's like, you're more like your father than I thought you were, to Akeem. Like, look at you using this boy as a pawn. And Lavelle hears this and he gets upset. And I'm just like, Lavelle, you should have seen the writing on the wall. Like, you came to this country because they had money. Y'all were using each other. It was mutual. Yeah. Why are you upset now? Like, clearly this man has children, and the only reason he wants you is because you are a son. This game was written before you the moment you stepped off the plane. Why are you upset at this very moment enough to flee the country, to go back to America, to marry this girl from Zamunda? And I'm like, why are you getting married? You just met her a week ago. Like, it makes sense when you're like, oh, it doesn't make sense. But, like, when you're a royal, it's like, okay, we have to do this fast because royal protocol, I don't know, but there's literally no reason for them to get married in that moment, because he's not even planning to come back to Zamunda. Like, why are you getting married in Queens? Like, I fully did not. And it was like, okay, if they were like really in love and it was like a really cute like little rom-com story and I was like invested in them as a couple, I would have been like, oh my god, cute. But like, it wasn't. It wasn't at all.
Not at all. Especially because, like, this is when I started getting mad again, too, because I felt the same way. Like, clearly, don't even remember her name. Like, not at all invested in this. So it's not like, oh, yeah, you're finally, you found the love. So why not get married? First of all, no, don't believe in that. But two, the wedding that they were going to have was so gross. Like, in that weird fake church with, and they make fun of it too, with the pastor who's not wearing shoes, who I think is played by Arsenio Hall. It was so gross and weird. And I was like, you took this beautiful African woman to like crap hole part of Queens into this gross fake church. Like, why? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, I'm like, there, I have been to Queens. I usually live in New York. Like, there are many places that you could have gone to get married on a short notice that are better than this place. But again, why are you getting married on short notice? Like, it's like, if he had been up until that point, like, if part of his character development was, I really want to be in love, and like, that's something I've never experienced before, I would have been like, all right, cool, like, we'll have an aerial daddy I love him moment. But that was nowhere part of his storyline. So I'm like, okay, if the pressure of being Prince of Zamunda is off of you now, why do you feel the need to get married at this moment? You've known this woman for a week. Like, you, there's no reason to not just date. Like, I just didn't understand what the accelerated marriage timeline was for, other than for, like, the drama, which I love drama, but it didn't work.
Yeah, it didn't work. It was really strange. And it was just like, at that movie, it felt, or at that moment, it felt like the movie was running on fumes, mm-hmm. especially because somehow Akeem, you know, he knows that this is happening. And of course, because he's always just knows where everybody is and what's happening, where, despite Queens being the biggest borough in the New York City, mm-hmm. he ends up at this weird church and is like able to, you know, object and is like, don't get married. And then, of course, Barbara Girl is like, I don't want to get married here anyway. I'm from Zamunda. So they go back to Zamunda. It's but just also like,
at the, like, while those two are getting married, like, next Doria decides to, like, invade to, they come originally to see if Lavelle's going to marry Tiana Taylor, but Lavelle is indisposed in America. And so his daughter, Mika, like, kicks everybody's asses, and like the general's just like, someone should have told you to be more polite. And Mika's like, fuck you. And then her and her sisters and Arsenio Hall get into this fight sequence, and they just kick everybody's asses. And I'm like, wait, I'm confused. If this was the solution here, why didn't we do this in the first place?
Like, someone shows up and threatens to assassinate your dad, and you're just rolling with it. Why didn't you just kick his ass the first time?
I'm like, wait, so we were really worried about Akeem getting assassinated when his daughters could have just murked these people so fast? Like, I'm confused as to why. Like, there was no external pressure if this was the solution. If three women under the age of 21 could beat these men's asses, what was the point of this whole movie?
Oh, my God.
And so apparently they come to some diplomatic solution that we just don't see because, like, I mean, I would also come to a diplomatic solution if someone was holding, like, a staff to my neck. Like, I don't want to die like that. I'm sure mm-hmm. Wesley Snipes doesn't want to die like that. But I was just like, okay, all this is getting wrapped up real easily, but it could have been wrapped up before any of this movie happened.
Ugh. And then it definitely at the same time made me think, all the time I would have gone back.
Yes.
I would have had so much more free time tonight.
What if this could have just been the first 30 minutes of the movie? Or like, I don't even, yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot.
It was definitely a lot. And it was just like, there was really no point in having that subplot basically with how like, quickly they were able to kick this guy's ass, which was like a cool scene because I do love seeing young girls like, as you said, murk a shitty dude.
Yeah.
Love that. Murk it. It was exactly what it was. And seeing Arsenio Hall beat some people up too was fun. But yeah, definitely did not need to happen. So then everyone comes back from America. This has happened. So now it's like, oh, we don't actually have to worry about we don't have to worry about next Doria anymore. So now everyone can be happy, which we could have been happy many, many minutes ago.
Yes, because like, so they everyone comes back, Lavelle gets married, and at the wedding party, like, Akeem says to his daughter, he's like, you're going to be the heir. Like, when I go, you're going to be the heir. And I was just like, this was so easy. Like, y'all can't see my face, but I'm just like the expression. I was like, my eye was twitching. Like, I was like, wait, it took you this long to get to this conclusion. And what's wild is like this movie, in the grand scheme of movies that are far too long, this movie wasn't even that long. This was like a tight 90 pretty much. And like,
oh my God, really? Tight,
yes. This was like an hour, so 43 minutes maybe. I was like, this is a short movie. I was like, what has happened for this to take so long to get to this? This could have happened in the first 20 minutes. Like, we all knew Mika would have made a great, like, queen. Then Lavelle didn't have to get married. And next Doria got their asses kicked. And now it's fine, apparently. None of it felt earned. Like, nothing that happened felt earned to me.
And, like, Akeem, so I guess, like, Akeem has learned something from this and that now he can, like, be more of a feminist. But, yeah, did any of this have to happen for that to occur? Like, it was so disappointing that this, like, kind of happy-go-lucky dude who just really wanted to, like, be different than his dad, has suddenly become his dad for like really no reason. And now we have to go through, I really thought this movie was like at least 2 hours. It felt so long to me. And I never paused it either.
Wow. No, I paused it multiple times. I think it took me like 2.5 hours to watch it because I kept pausing. God. I mean, I was also like theoretically working. But I just kept having to pause it and be like, all right, cool. Mm-hmm. It felt very much like the movie started from the premise that we want to get all these black stars in a room and in a movie. And then it went backwards from there in terms of like plot and character development. And it was a very strange experience, which was made stranger by how egregious the branding in the movie was. Like, I don't know if you noticed, maybe it's because I kept pausing, but I was just like, I've never noticed branding as much as I did in this movie. Like, Pepsi, Fashion Nova, Friskies, like,
oh yeah,
Spotify, Lyft. I was like, I can tell this movie, like, I was like, so this movie was so you could get a bunch of black stars in a room so you could get a shit ton of brand deals. Like, that is, it felt like an ad for what, I don't even know. Like, it felt like an extended, one of those really extended 15-minute ads where it's like, this is a story. And I'm like, what was the point? What was the point?
It literally should have just been a Super Bowl ad, honestly.
Yeah, honestly.
We didn't need a whole movie. It could have just been a series of little Super Bowl ads.
Yes.
And that would have been fine.
It would have been completely fine. And yeah. I'm like, this is, I think, maybe one of the worst, like, uses of the nostalgia vehicle, which is so disappointing because I'm like, I love seeing, like, Morgan Freeman in a movie with, like, James Earl Jones and all these, like, other black stars. Mm-hmm. But for what? Like, for what reason? Like, also, like, Salt-N-Pepa showed up, and also En Vogue showed up, and I was like, that's cool. I like that. Into that. Also, Gladys Knight.
Oh, my God. Yeah, that was fun.
Yeah. I was like, it felt like a randomly stitched together series of like nostalgic moments. And I'm enjoying seeing these people, but I feel like there could have been a better way to do this.
Totally. I did like also in the very long credits that had like mid credits and post credits that they had John Legend from his home. Did you notice that? Did you make it through the credits?
I didn't know. Of course I heard the only John reason. Legend track. I heard John Legend track, and I'm going to be honest. John Legend had a moment, and I really love Ordinary People. But like, whenever I hear John Legend's voice now, I'm just like, I find you so corny. It's honestly ridiculous.
Oh, it was peak corny. The only reason I was Chromecasting from my computer, and it was in a different room, so I couldn't really pause it. So I just let it roll, and that's why I saw like all of the credits. And also, I was just mad at that point.
Yeah.
But there was that like song that was like all falsetto that one of the like attendants sang when he was introducing Teyana Taylor, the original, like the first time. So they showed John Legend actually performing that in full. Was like him, he filmed it in his home, like clearly during the pandemic, and it was like kind of low quality. So that was actually kind of cute. But it was also very corny because then at the end he was like, love you guys or something. Like it was like a YouTube video basically.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a kind of cute way to end. But I agree, like definitely a big waste of lots of black talent from many different generations. Ultimately, yeah, just like a big disappointment, especially because as you said, you haven't watched the original in a long time, but I had just watched it the night before and I loved it as a kid. And I really did still like it this time. Like, it was funny. It was fun to, like, see New York in the 80s because, you know, I wasn't alive then. And I live in Brooklyn now, too. And it's, like, a fun, cute rom-com. Like, I do like to see that relationship. But this movie just completely, like, dumps on that one. Like, tries to get the nostalgia, as you said, and fails. Just brutally fails.
This insulted the original property where I'm just like, you...
Yeah.
It's like you didn't understand what made the movie good.
Absolutely. That's exactly it. So overall, recommended.
Definitely. I mean, see it so you can see it for yourself. Like, like my parents will probably like this movie, I think. Mm-hmm. But just don't go in expecting like the kind of draw of the first movie at all. I am very excited to see the discourse around this movie. Like, I want to see too. What people think about this movie.
I hope we generate the discourse from this podcast.
Yes, love to see it.
That's our show. Please subscribe to the Slate Spoiler Special podcast feed. And if you like the show, please rate and review it in the Apple Podcast Store or wherever you get your podcasts. If you have suggestions for movies or TV shows we should spoil, or if you have any other feedback you'd like to share, please send it to spoilers@slate.com. And for our Slate podcast listeners, help us make a better Slate by answering our survey. It'll only take a few minutes, and you can find it at slate.com/survey. Our producer is Morgan Flannery. I'm here with Rachel Hampton, and I'm Allegra Frank. Thanks for listening. Thank you.